Okay, so let's continue the session. Now we have Kwandwani from Malawi, and he will tell us more about FOSS technologies in modeling spatial accessibility of primary healthcare in Malawi. So the floor is yours.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Like you said, I'm Kwandwani from Malawi, and I'll be presenting on behalf of my colleague who couldn't make it, but we're presenting on part of a thesis that Yemekane Ozakala working on, which is FOSS technologies in modeling spatial accessibility of primary healthcare. So I will take you through that particular list, but in terms of introducing the topic, I'll just go straight into healthcare accessibility, which is the opportunity or ease with which communities can timely use appropriate health services in proportion to their needs. And there are push-pull factors around this, including demand and supply. In this case, spatial accessibility combines both availability and also geographic access. And the relationship between the available healthcare services and the population that is being targeted to access that particular service. And spatial accessibility modeling in our case now is an important step in policy making and improved decision making for communities and states like Malawi would be in this particular case. So let me just elaborate to say that we decided to go in this particular direction because we would want to at least have some proper scientific basis of determining to say, okay, this population has access to healthcare or not. So the need for us to provide equal and access to primary healthcare, I mean, we all understand why that is important. But for our case, the approaches that are informing the decision-making process itself to improve the access are facing a number of challenges, specifically in the developing world. In some cases, ICT has actually been incorporated, but if you talk of proprietary software, some of the challenges are that it can actually be prohibitively expensive, both directly and indirectly. So in this particular case, the idea was now to try and explore the confluence of FOSS on spatial accessibility tools and also healthcare delivery, so that we'll be able now to inform the decision-making in terms of primary healthcare. But we are now not looking at the whole of the country, but for a district in Malawi. So in terms of how healthcare is delivered, we're looking at the Minister of Health, which provides the health services through both promotive and preventive at the lowest level, and it rises all the way up to tertiary and specialist training, specialist care. But 70% of the services still are at the lowest primary and secondary levels, largely due to poor gatekeeping at the higher levels. And at policy level, the ministry defines accessibility as a Euclidean distance. So they set up an 8-kilometer radius and say anybody who is within 8 kilometers of a certain health facility could be considered to be having access to healthcare. But we know that that may not be exactly true. And based on that, the health sector strategic plan for 2017 and 2022 actually populates or suggests that 90% of the people in Malawi have actually access. And we are saying this may not necessarily be true. So there are some direct and indirect costs that are being experienced for people to actually access the health facilities, particularly in the rural areas. And already the demographic health survey reports that about 50% of the women have struggles to access healthcare, and most of them, they actually cite distance as a major barrier. So, like I've said, this is part of work that was being done. And the whole presentation here will focus on evaluating the spatial tools that were actually being used in coming up with the primary healthcare accessibility model. And the study area is That's where Malawi is located, and we have three neighbors, Tanzania, Zambia, and Mozambique. And this is the district, so it's the in the southern part of Malawi. I'll take you through the methodology. The bigger scheme of the methodology had three components. So we have part A, part B, and then I'll also talk about part C. But primarily, we had the basic functionalities, and at the center of it all, we had the PG routing as an algorithm that was running PG Jikstra cost and also slope. So we had to prepare the data. Here we're exploding the data to about 20 meters so that we make sure that because we'll be accessing the accessibility in terms of where the hospital is or where the household is to the road network, so we need to make sure that at least we improve the accuracy to make sure that if the segment is 100 kilometers long, then the next node on that road will be 100 kilometers away. So we had to reduce that to at least try and make sure it's close enough. And then we also wanted to incorporate elevation. So we, for each node, we had to overlay it with a DM and then get the elevation for that particular point. And then what the algorithm was doing now is to calculate, for example, and identify the vertices on the road network that are closest to a facility. And we use the post-GIS functions of ST distance and also the aggregate functions in SQL for us to be able to come up with a list of these vertices. And then we had to calculate the travel path cost so that we are now able to determine which particular point can actually access which particular health facility to every other node within the 8 kilometer as prescribed. And here we use the Jikstra algorithm as specified in PG routing. Plus, we attached a cost through the elevation data that we had. After that, now we had to calculate the cheapest route for the household to travel. Because there are several facilities that a household could actually travel, and there are also several alternatives that they can actually go through, we had to at least determine the cheapest route. So we're determining, because there are several households, I think for the area we had about 139,000 households. Computationally, that meant a lot of processing. But because we are running it on the standard computers, we had to optimize by subsetting the operations. So we're using for every household within 8 kilometer radius, and the network we're generating the network vectors that are within that 8 kilometer radius, and their travel cost to a facility. And then for each of those households, we are now identifying the cheapest vertex closest to it, and that is now within 1 kilometer. You may be wondering why we are switching between the radiuses. It's purely on computational basis. If you let it search more than 1 kilometer, then it may never, or it could get to the result, but it may take forever. So that's just one way. Now, once we had prepared the data in this particular case, now we had to pass it through the spatial accessibility model itself. And in this case, we use the two-step floating catchment area, which essentially creates two floats. There's a service catchment, which says for each service, which is located at a certain location, you need to find all the households, which will now mount to the population that is within that particular threshold time, and then locate that are located at that particular location, and then calculate the population to provider ratio and represented by that particular mathematical equation there. And then the second step is now to generate or to calculate the population for the catchment. So for each population that we've generated, you need now to find all the services that fall within a threshold time accessible at location I, and then sum the populations to provide the ratios from that step one. We added a Gaussian, so the TFC in itself is more categorical. So we added a Gaussian continuous decay function so that even though the households could be within similar location, but the accessibility could actually be spread and be more continuous rather than being discrete in terms of time steps. So as AI increases, then which is the accessibility for the households, then the accessibility for the household is also increasing. So overall, that's the methodology, parts A, B, and then the actual spatial accessibility as represented. In terms of the results, for process 1A, in which case we are now looking at calculating the facility to distance to the nearest vertex, because we had to explore, the distances were now limited to about an average of 113 meters for all the 41 health facilities that we have in the study area. But now for us to be able to reduce the search space to identify the vertices again, we had to limit it to about 400 meters. And this 400 meters is generated or was actually arrived at when we compared the road data, the road network data for the road, the maximum distance for each facility to a road network before exploding was about 300 something meters. Therefore, we concluded that even if we explode, there is no way there could be a facility that could exceed. So we took the next 100, which was now 400. So in terms of the distances, so we did two travel distances. Traveling without taking elevation into consideration or slope, and this was the average distances that we were actually getting, about 5.2 kilometers. If you factor in the elevation, then the distances were actually coming to about 5.23. So there isn't really much of a difference, but the implications would be seen as I move on. Now, when you look at an individual health facility, for example, like I said, the policy says you have to be within 8 kilometers to a health facility for you to be considered to have access to health services. So we had to do some analysis to say, okay, for example, if you look at that particular health facility, within the 8 kilometer radius, you could actually have all these particular households. But between 6 and 8 kilometers, you're actually finding that you have about 6,000 households. And 71% of these households were actually traveling more than 8 kilometers. So using the road network that we have here, if somebody is staying somewhere here, for them to travel to get to that particular health facility, even though they're within 8 kilometers, they're actually traveling more than 8 kilometers. So this scenario is actually occurring for almost every other facility that we have in there. Now, for us to standardize what we're doing, what we did now next was to say, okay, what are the recommended parameters that we can actually now begin to compare and say, okay, this is the case for our study area. So we adopted the travel time measure rather than just looking at distance, even though we incorporated slope. Because the advantage is with time, you are now including even the mode of transport that the people are actually going to be using. So we adopted a one-hour threshold because most of the research that we studied, they were actually looking at a one-hour threshold. And this one-hour threshold translates to a travel distance of about 5 kilometers, whichever mode of transport you take into consideration. If you have to travel more than 5 kilometers within the 1 hour, whatever mode you're using, then you are actually having poor access to health facilities. When we did that, what transpired was that about 39% of the population was actually could be considered not to have access to healthcare. And the distributions in terms of urban and rural, because the population was combined, if you look at the urban situation, about 99.9% of the people are actually having access, are within the 5 kilometer travel distance. But only about 55 or so percent in the rural areas. And the average of the two is the one that is now coming to about 39%. When you now consider time, you find that about 59% of the households have access to healthcare within an hour or 60 minutes. And in the urban, again, we have about 99%, but in the rural, it's only 53.4. So this, to some extent, agrees with the, what the district health survey had identified, to say about 56% of the households. And this was only looking at the women were actually having struggles to access healthcare, which is far much lower in both cases than what the Ministry would have actually been reporting at that particular time, indicating that we have about 90% accessibility. Again, of notice is that almost all households in the urban areas are actually having a health facility within an hour. And what is surprising, or not exactly surprising, is that for all the households in the urban areas, they have actually at least access to at least five facilities. While in the rural areas, the only 34% of the people have access to at most one, and 43 has access to at most one, and then 34% have access to at most two, respectively. So they really there's a really very big disparity in between what is happening for the rural and urban situation. Now, to look at the distribution in terms of a map, we now had to come up with a map indicating the distances for the households. So the map on the left is covering the facilities. So everywhere where you have some circle or ring towards a certain particular color, in this case, the light green at the center there, that's where the actual facility is. And then the spanning out indicates the distances as you move out. So you'll notice that for the model scores, they are about more than one facility could actually be accessed within 60 kilometers. So you have a higher score if you can access at least one facility in within a kilometer, within an hour. The highest scores that we noted, apart from the urban areas, but we also noted one for an island health facility, largely because it has a low population, because the model is looking at not just the number of people, but also the type of services that are actually being offered at that particular time. So the fewer the people, the higher the accessibility would be assumed. We also had the very high scores for the boundary facilities, and the reason is largely because of the edge effect. For the facilities that are on the edges, they are actually serving other households that are in the neighboring districts. But because we had taken them out, it's now reducing the number of people that are, so it would, it's now affecting how the model is actually going to behave. So in the final analysis, we are looking at if you have to increase equitable access to and also improve the quality of the healthcare services, we need to have sound and formal assessments of access to healthcare, service coverage, and also detailed analysis of the underserved population. In which case, in the absence of such analysis, then critical decisions tend to be made more on political rather than pragmatic considerations, and most of the times with very far less optimal results. And to conclude, we've tried to at least provide an arguably spatially objective accessibility model to inform the policy direction, and it reveals that the healthcare accessibility is not as rosy as is being indicated by the ministry, and it's actually far much lower. And more importantly, we're also able to highlight the usefulness of free and open source technologies in the developing world. It has actually provided us cost-effective assessments. But more importantly, we are able to do, it was able to facilitate for us an incremental setup of the model. You may not fully appreciate this, but if you have very limited processing on your computers, you need to have ways in which you can actually have your models running incrementally, little by little, until you get your final result. Because if you lump everything together, then your computer will crash, or you'll not even be able to get your result. But more importantly, again, we also were able to do this persistently. And this is important because for some of you that have been in Africa or in sub-Saharan Africa, for example, you notice that power is an issue. So you can't have a model that will run for 3-4 hours, because chances of having a power blackout could be there. So because we're able to run this on against a backend of PostGIS, which is a persistent data storage engine, we could come back and resume from where we'd stopped from. So this looks simple here, but it's really something that could go a long way in doing. So if this could be done at one district level, then if you have to scale it up and look at the whole nation, then it's actually possible, even though it may take longer, but at least you know you can circumvent some of these particular problems. Thank you very much.
So thank you very much, Konwani. Are there any questions? One second, so this is yours.
Hello. First of all my compliments for this very interesting study. I do something similar, so I really appreciated the approach that you made. The statistical modeling, it's very impressive, my compliments. I got two questions. The first one is, how do you distinguish between urban and rural areas? I mean, do you use a custom function or is a threshold for the analysis? How do you distinguish between the two areas? And the second one, have you considered maybe as a future development to see this from the opposite perspective? So not to analyze the coverage of hospitals, but to analyze the demand. So try to look what are the areas according to the population, and also if you have any health-related data to the risk of diseases, what are the critical areas in which the demand is super high but the coverage is the poorest?
All right. Thank you very much. I'll start with the second part because I've forgotten the first one. have you thought about getting to the demand aspect? Yes, like I've said, this is part of the work that is being done. But what we also did beyond this was to say, okay, this is the situation. But now, how then do we move forward? We have identified these areas to be having very poor accessibility. What next? So we did run some analysis where we use the grid algorithm. We are not so sure. We didn't really add a lot of options there. But to at least now determine where next, if you have to come up with another facility, where next should you actually be putting it? So we did do that, but it's not part of the presentation. Just remind me the first question again.
How did you distinguish between urban and rural areas?
Oh, rural and urban areas. I think that was the study area is divided into several, I would say, wards, and the wards belong to either urban and rural. So we just run the model completely and then decide, just overlaid with the urban and rural sections and determined that these are in urban, these are in rural. So there wasn't anything specific in the modeling itself, it was just purely overlay. Yeah. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, Yes. Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's a very interesting work. My question refers more to the data. So what was the accuracy of the data? So which kind of data? Did you use some authoritative data or open source data? And which is the accuracy? Because this is also very relevant when you want to apply to a model.
Yeah. So the data, the critical data here is one, the population, like the locations of the households, number one. Number two is on the road network itself. Unfortunately, for example, the open sources are not very detailed for our country. We are hoping to actually work on that and improve. For example, so we couldn't go to OpenStreetMap and get as detailed data as you'd have. So what we did is we went to the surveying department, so we are at least able to get the detailed road network for our country to the lowest level possible. So we use that particular data and run. In terms of the exact location, we use the census data for the population. As you might be aware, the census data doesn't actually give you exact locations. So what we did was to get the numbers and then try and randomize. Of course, we masked out all the other areas where we know people can't live. So if it's a forest, we couldn't randomize into those areas. So that's how we handled. But the actual number of households is as per the census population. But the exact location and distribution is not exactly as the per the census because we couldn't get that data. Thank you. Yes, there's another hand there.
Hi, yeah, great presentation.
Thank you.
This is really to follow up on that question, because when did you do the study?
This was done earlier this year.
Did you use the latest 2018 census?
Unfortunately, we couldn't because we couldn't get access of the to the data. So we used the 2008 population census data and with projections to 2018.
No, excellent. It'd be great to run the again with the latest, because also what the NSO, National Statistics Office in Malawi, have done is they've identified every dwelling as a point file.
Yes.
So that will increase the accuracy even more, because we'll not only have the ward boundary or the enumeration boundary, but you'll actually have the physical location of a dwelling.
Yeah.
So I think running it, I think it's great. I think that you've got something here that you can run again with more up-to-date data, which means that suddenly your results, you know, will be much
improved. Actually tried to get the latest data. Like 2 months ago, I contacted the NSO, but that's when I was told we haven't really cleaned up the data to open it up. But we will definitely do that.
Releasing it.
So yes. Yeah.
They're only just releasing the data, and some of it, like the point data for dwellings, they might not even put into the public domain.
Yeah.
An interesting thing to follow this is that we're producing a rural access indicator.
Yeah.
Where we're looking at all of the population that are within 2 kilometers of the road network.
Yeah.
And we are, through the survey department and through the roads authorities, mm-hmm. we're publishing the road network on OpenStreetMap now.
Yeah.
And there's world population data from WorldPop, who are now going to take the latest NSO data and produce 100-meter pixel data, which means that suddenly the world can take OpenStreetMap, the world can take WorldPop, and all these NGOs and all these government organizations or whoever can then start to use this, not just for planning rural access, but for planning hospitals, for planning humanitarian and all those sorts of things. So it's really interesting, your talk. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I've...
Last question.
Oh, okay.
Hi. So I'm interested in how detailed your health facilities are, like where the data is. Do they have access to surgery rooms? What medicine do they have? You mentioned that the statistics for women is lower. Are they reproductive health facilities? Like, do you have that information? And maybe that's like to further it in the future.
Yes and no. Not very detailed. And that's the more reason why we are calling this primary health care. So it may not be a complicated service. So we're looking at the basics. If they need to be treated with malaria, are they able to get those things? So most of the health facilities that we have here, they actually can handle all the needs, the basic needs of primary health care. That's to some extent, yes. Of course, there will be some facilities that don't have one or two things, but at least if somebody decides not to visit it, it would not necessarily be because they don't have the facility, but they've chosen to go somewhere else. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.